We're going to have a reading now, which is our sort of key passage from the Holy Habits book. Simon's going to come and read to us. Thank you.
The early church was a sect within Judaism, and they held their own separate meetings. In this reading, we learn about what that early community was like. So Acts chapter 2. They devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and fellowship, to the breaking of bread and the prayers. Awe came upon everyone because many wonders and signs were being done by the apostles. All who believed were together and had all things in common. They would sell their possessions and goods and distribute the proceeds to all as any had need. Day by day, as they spent much time together in the temple, they broke bread at home and ate their food with glad and generous hearts, praising God and having the goodwill of all people. And day by day, the Lord added to their number those who were being saved. This is the story of the early church. May we learn from it today.
Paul reminds the church in Corinth about a gift they promised to give. And the readings from Paul's second letter to Corinthians chapter 9. Now, it is not necessary for me to write to you about the ministry to the saints, for I know your eagerness, which is the subject of my boasting about you, to the people of Macedonia, saying that Achaia has been ready since last year, and your zeal has stirred up most of them. But I'm sending the brothers in order that our boasting about you may not prove to have been empty in this case, so that you may be ready, as I said you would be. Otherwise, if some Macedonians come with me and find that you are not ready, we will be humiliated, to say nothing of you, in this undertaking. So I thought it necessary to urge the brothers to go on ahead to you and arrange in advance for this bountiful gift that you have promised, so that it may be ready as a voluntary gift and not as an extortion. The point is this: the one who sows sparingly will also reap sparingly, and the one who sows bountifully will also reap bountifully. Each of you must give as you have made up your mind, not reluctantly or under compulsion, for God loves a cheerful giver. And God is able to provide you with every blessing in abundance, so that by always having enough of everything, you may share abundantly in every good work. As it is written, he scatters abroad, he gives to the poor, his righteousness endures forever. He who supplies seed to the sower and bread for food will supply and multiply your seed for sowing and increase the harvest of your righteousness. You will be enriched in every way for your great generosity, which will produce thanksgiving to God through us. For the rendering of this ministry not only supplies the needs of the saints, but also overflows with many thanksgivings to God. Through the testing of this ministry, you glorify God by your obedience to the confession of the gospel of Christ and by the generosity of your sharing with them and with all others, while they long for you and pray for you because of the surpassing grace of God that he has given you. Thanks be to God for his indescribable gift.
Thank you, Keith. I do love that passage, especially the first bit where Paul says, now you said you were going to give, and just to remind you, I'm going to send the brothers. It sounds like they're coming with their violin cases. Could be the good opening for a mafia film. I don't think that's actually what was happening, but it does have that sort of feel to it. So, we're looking today at holy habits and generosity. And Andrew Roberts, who wrote the book, makes an excellent point in this chapter. The start point for Christian giving is the generosity of God. It starts with God's generosity. However, in my experience, some of the most ungenerous people that I have met were rich. God had been very generous to them, but it seems to have stopped there. Even Christian rich people. I used to work with a faith organization where we had to raise funds from individuals sponsoring us on a monthly or annual basis. And I visited many older Christian widows who wanted to hear about my work. And I often went with the expectation that they would pray and maybe give a small amount of money. And often I left humbled by the amount that they gave. And not only that, but often they gave very quickly. They didn't want to think about it, they just gave. I also visited many well-off Christians, there's plenty of them in Northern Ireland, who I hoped would be large givers. Instead, they wanted time to consider, and they often gave very little. Now, I'm not making hard and fast conclusions from this experience, just to say, you know, there are generous rich people, and there are less generous, not so well-off people. But in my experience, it was often the other way around. The less people had, the more generous they seemed to be. We should give, according to what Andrew is saying, according to how we've received. But sadly, it doesn't always happen. To those who've been given much, much will be expected, is one of the principles of the New Testament. Now, also, giving isn't just about money. There are many other ways which we've been blessed and many other gifts that we've received that are given to us to pass on and bless others. And in Surrey nowadays, I think possibly the most precious gift we have to give to others is time. Give people your time. Often through listening. I'm on Twitter, yes, I confess. And 2 weeks ago, I heard this great story from a friend on Twitter. She was in the queue at the train station to buy a ticket. The woman in front of her bought her ticket and thanked the machine for giving her her ticket. After thanking the machine for giving her a ticket, she realized what she'd done and rather sheepishly turned to the woman behind her in the queue and said, "That's the first time I've heard my voice today." The second woman who was doing the tweeting, who happened to be a Christian, straight away invited her for a cup of coffee and they struck up a good conversation and arranged to meet again later. I just thought, how sad that this woman is talking to the ticket machine. And yet probably surrounded by lots of people. Here at St. Mark's, we have very generous people. I'm pleased about it. Like Dave Wigley with his computer skills, often going out into the night to fix those computer problems. David Willock with his electrical gifts, and he holds a mean chainsaw. The vicarage garden will never be the same again. Anne and Janet and others who've got the foresight to see who needs a meal and to take it round. Those who cut the grass, who decimate the hedges and clean the church. Those who serve coffee. Those who preparing things, teaching our children. Alison and her baptism visiting. Our gifts of hospitality. There are too many to mention all of them. But thank you, not just from me, but from God, for using the gifts you've been given. And thank you from all of us, as the body of Christ here, for using your gifts to serve one another. Now, giving would not be complete in a Christian book without the mention of the T word, tithing. Tithing was a system whereby people gave 10% of their first fruits or of their income or whatever to God. And Roberts praises churches that tithe. And he talks about their sheer ability to do ministry because they've got the financial resources to do it. Imagine if everyone gave 10% of the money they earned to church. Church would be very rich. Even 5%, as recommended by a former Archbishop of Canterbury, who said, give 5% to the church, 5% to charity. But again, to counter that, I know such a church where that's what the people do. And their giving is almost double of every other church in the area per head of membership. That same church was visited by someone with mental health needs who came asking for prayer and friendship and was told, go see a doctor. Not exactly a very welcoming and giving attitude. That is hardly Christian healing in any sense of the word. Of course, both and would be good. But giving, as I say, is about more than just giving money. It's about a heart attitude as well as a hand position. Roberts talks in this book about Zacchaeus. And Zacchaeus, you'll remember, was a tax collector who was crooked as anything and had cheated people. And Jesus comes to visit him, and on his conversion, Zacchaeus gives 50% of his wealth away and pays back everybody he cheated four times as much as he swindled off them. As John Wimber, one of those charismatic leaders from the 80s, said of Zacchaeus, that was some conversion. Oh, for more of those, he said. Now, let me say another word about tithing, which Roberts hints at but doesn't say much on. Tithing is not actually for Christians. We are called to give all that we have. We are stewards of God's money. So we don't own anything that is ours. Some people tithe because it reminds them that it's not their money. So by giving 10%, they're reminded that the other 90% is really God's money too. So that's one purpose, one useful purpose of tithing. But it does follow from the principle from the Old Testament that if you honor God with your substance and with the first fruits of your produce, then that's how you should live. In other words, give to God the first 10% to remind you that God actually owns all of it. And it is the idea is that you honor God with all that you have, but you demonstrate it by giving away the first tenth. And it came from a rural context where they literally gave 10% of their harvest over to, as it was, the priests in those days. Now, Roberts uses this provocative statement in his book from a former teacher of his. An offering is what you give to guests when they come round for a meal. A collection is what you gather up and give to the dog afterwards. I thought that's an interesting statement, and I'm going to let you talk about it in a moment, but I just wanted to put it up there so you can be thinking of it. Roberts finishes this chapter on giving with this thought. He says, giving is the most challenging of the holy habits, not least because it challenges the selfishness that is at the heart of many powerful economic systems, and which is the root of personal sinfulness. I think he's hinting at that the proverb, the love of money is the root of all evil. It, if you like, embodies our selfishness. And this is made all the more poignant in his book because he started the chapter with the reminder from the Acts passage that Keith read that the early church, or sorry, that Simon read, the early church sold their possessions their property and gave to meet the needs of others so that no one would be needy. That's quite a challenge. I want to finish with this story before we have a bit of a discussion. Steve Chalk told this story on Radio 2 one morning. He was walking through London with a few friends and some visitors who'd come over from Africa to visit his church. Suddenly, as they're walking through London, one of the Africans stopped in the middle of the street. The rest walked on some yards before they'd even noticed that he wasn't with them anymore. And the guy stood still in the middle of a London street while people filed past. He was totally absorbed in something. It had arrested his attention to the point where he stood like an island in a sea of moving bodies. Steve Chalk and her friends returned to him and asked him, "What's happened? Why have you stopped here?" It turned out he'd heard a bird singing and was amazed that here in London, one of the busiest cities in the world, a bird was singing. And as Steve Chalk reflected on this, he realized that if someone had dropped some coins, he and all his UK mates would have had a similar reaction. They'd have stopped dead to look for the money. And it begs the question, are we so wedded to money that we could hear a 10p piece fall to the ground while at the Formula One races at Silverstone, but we'd miss a bird singing on the South Bank? Now, I'm sure you all know the joke about the rich man who died and a bystander inquired about his wealth, asking, "How much did he leave?" And the bystander was told, "All of it, of course." So could we have that quote? Yep, there it is. Have a quick discussion. What do you think about this quote? Is there truth in it? Is it too harsh? Does it make sense? Would you want to rewrite it somehow? So have a quick, I'll give you 2 minutes for a quick chat. And then we don't have a collection here at St. Mark's very often. We allow people to make offerings at the back. But is that the right approach? Keith?
Well, it's about words. I mean, as well as being bothered that the word "you" has got a capital Y, an offering is something that you give out, and a collection is something that you gather in.
Okay.
So, I mean, the next hymn that we're going to sing is often described as the offertory hymn, but during an offertory hymn, we used to take a collection. So I don't know whether that's a contradiction in what we should be thinking about.
Interesting. We did have a collection at Christmas, and it was for the reason that someone suggested they had been to a church where there was an offering time. And what they did was they had some music playing, but it wasn't a hymn that you sang along to. And people then were invited to come forward and put their offering into, I'm not quite sure what it was, probably some sort of bin of some sort. So people actually brought their offerings rather than having a collection. I thought that was interesting. We decided we'd try it at Christmas, but we couldn't really invite people to come up because we're bunged at Christmas and it was so full. So any other comments? I'm just throwing ideas at you here. Fred's going to say something as well. Martin is the treasurer.
Oh. talked about this, and I think it's about control. Making an offering is the person giving is in control of what they're offering as a response. But a collection is just collecting it in.
The person doing the collecting actually has a measure of control.
Yes, yeah. And okay. One other thing I'd say, I mean, I've heard a few sort of talks or encouragements about giving, and one phrase I've heard is that give what is right, not what is left.
The first thing you said reminded me about the joke about Ian Paisley, who was said that at his church they'd pass around plastic buckets. And he would say, we're now going to have a silent collection. Fred, did you want to say something?
It's more or less what Martin said. Martin said. But I see an offering as something unsolicited. You're giving it of your own free will because you want to. A collection implies a demand.
Like a tax.
Like a tax. Mm. And the further reflection is that if a collection is what the dog you give to the dog afterwards, it's in a sense saying that a collection only ends up giving the leftovers, the rubbish, the unwanted.
Mm.
That's the way I interpret it anyway.
Interesting. You could say that tax that we pay to the government is a collection. Because we don't offer it, do we? It is a collection. I always remember one of the elders at one church I was at who stood up to speak on giving, and he said, tithing means giving 10%. That's the good news. The bad news is, in the Old Testament, there were three tithes. So that's 30%. He said, given that you pay 20% to the government, you can give the other 10% to church. And that was his logic and reasoning. That was his sermon summed up in one sentence.
As a matter of interest, what were the taxes used for in biblical times? Did the state give any kind of service to the people?
The taxes originally, these tithes, were originally given to the one tribe that didn't have any land, which were the Levites. And their job was basically similar to the priesthood. So their job was to conduct worship. So it was a tax for that purpose. And then what happened was when they had a monarchy, the monarchy, of course, taxed them as well. And so the tithe then became for the tithe became for the temple, and the tax was usually in the form of grain and men for the war and women for serving in the palace. So they ended up getting doubly taxed. Heather.
I just thought that maybe the collection that you gather up and give to the dog afterwards is not just the leftovers, it's the surplus.
So do we give collection out of our surplus? So does that mean an offering is given out of our basics? Interesting thought. Right, thank you for that. Some interesting thoughts. And Martin no doubt will ruminate on them when he comes up with... and he's got forms afterwards if you want to make an offering. Dave, we had some more questions, did we? Two? Yes? No? Yeah. I'm just going to let you sit in silence with this for a moment. Identify a name, one or two specific places where you can live more generously, more open-handedly this week. Look for and create opportunities to do it. So we'll let that sit for a moment, and then Helen is going to come and lead us in our prayers for others.